And at first, when we were on this journey, I thought, you know, is this a use it or lose it type of skill? Like, oh, I learned this, I didn't do an audit with data for a few quarters, just the way you work. But I quickly learned that's not the case at all. Like, I can't imagine an audit that I'm not using my SQL skills to analyze something.
This episode is brought to you by Green Skies Analytics, an audit analytics service provider that works with internal audit departments that have data analysts and are still frustrated with trying to make analytics actually work, aren't getting the expected ROI, who can't break through the communication barrier between the analysts and the audit team, and those that need experienced direction for an audit analytics strategy and process. Those that feel like they've wasted time and money on trainings, aren't getting the value they want, not prioritizing the highest risk areas for the organizations, or have projects that seemingly never get completed. Do you deal with any of that? If you do, go to the show notes of this episode and click the Green Skies Analytics link, or go to greenskiesanalytics.com to schedule a call and understand how Green Skies Analytics makes analytics actually work for internal audit.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Audit Podcast. I'm your host, Trent Russell. Today on the show, we have Charlie Page. He is the Associate Director of Internal Audit at Verizon. And this whole episode, or most of this episode, is about how to issue audit reports faster. So we're talking about the written ones here. You don't necessarily have to issue a written audit report. You just have to communicate the findings. So some reports, I put reports in quotes, are best communicated in person or verbally. And I think historically, traditionally, we do it through PDFs, Word documents, etc. Emails, always a good choice also. If you go back and listen to Sarah I. James's, because there's multiple episodes. That's another good one if you're kind of struggling with audit reports and making those more effective. However, again, Charlie is speaking more specifically to more efficiently getting those out the door, as well as speaking to some of the effectiveness. So that's largely what this is about. I will give a warning to people, because last year at a conference, there was a CAE panel. There's a question around Agile that was posed to the panel, and one CAE just threw his hands up and was like, I'm tired of hearing about it. Next question, I don't even care. Personally, I think that's a horrible take to have, but Charlie does speak to elements of Agile as a way to get the audit report out faster. We also talk about within Agile, there's always this issue that people have, even if they do traditional, we'll say, auditing techniques, with getting access to the data. And so especially if you're trying to do 2-week sprints, how do you then make sure to get that data in a timely manner while also only having, and sometimes, you know, 2 weeks to do it? And so we speak to that also. All right, here we go. What is in your internet browsing history or your ChatGPT history?
Yeah, so, you know, personally, my wife and I do a kid-free trip every year. So we're planning our Tuscany adventure, and that's looking for the perfect kind of vineyard that's going to hold us for a few nights and then bounce over to the next place and exploring actually driving in a foreign country. So that's what I spend a lot of time trying to actually investigate. Like, I go pretty deep with that. Professionally, I'm a bit more of a creature of habit. So I have a routine where I will read just the general news. I'm in a non-logged-in private browsing view, so I'm not kind of getting too many scripted things to me based on my previous viewing. I just catch up with the world news. This week it's TikTok, right, being banned. So I just try to understand both sides of the story there. And but then I always Google my company, Verizon, and understand what's going on there. And then I translate over into Reddit, right? So I'm kind of reading the more PR views as well as reading what the customers say. And that just kind of helps me feel pretty informed of what's working, what's not working. And I think if people aren't reading Reddit, especially if they're kind of focused on customer experience, they're kind of missing out on an opportunity to see what customers are really saying.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. So you, if there's a story, I want the listeners to be able to do this also. So if they're like, there's a story about Verizon, you go look on Reddit for maybe where somebody posted that story, and then you read the comments in there, or do you just look for Verizon as a keyword in general, or is there a Verizon subreddit? Like, what do you actually do there? Because I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, there's a subreddit for all the telecommunication companies, right? So I will definitely read Verizon, And I may look at a specific topic related to something that I am auditing or exploring auditing. And so you can just kind of follow that and send those messages out to your team. So that's a pretty useful tool for me to just see what's being said about what's working and what's not. And it's good to look at your competitors, right? Do they have the same things that are coming up in their world as we have? Sometimes you can get by one way or the other of how things are working. So it's but just generally, what's hitting in terms of volume on your company and what's hitting in terms of most recent, and were you expecting to see that as most recent? There's been times too where, you know, we have policies where you can interact, right? You just have to disclose that you are who you are, and people will respond, right? They're posting there to get information. So as long as you do the appropriate disclosure, I work for Verizon, and you've protected your company yourself. I've got information actually from the people who are sharing this out on Reddit in a DM method. So that's kind of how I use it. And it's a creature of habits. It's the routine of how I unwind at the end of the day, is just to know what's going on.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we could probably just cut the show right there and people will go, yeah, that's a good takeaway. But yeah, that's pretty legit. So, all right. But I know we are going to talk about one of the things that one of the topics you want to talk about is your audit report issuance process and how you guys are able to do that continuously, and some of the benefits there. So I'm just going to throw it to you and have you walk us through how you and your team are able to issue audit reports in the effective way that you are.
Yeah, thanks. So I think for all the listeners, right, we're at different levels of our career in terms of why we're listening to an audit podcast. So for the CAE, their mission is, how do I get as many audit reports out as quickly as possible to meet kind of what the audit committee's expectations are from, you know, the actual teams that are doing the work? How do I make sure I'm hitting those timelines and those expectations? So it's, how do we issue these reports as quickly as possible, not just for the sake of issuing quickly as possible, but it's so that we can get onto the next risk and the next risk and the next risk, right? That's really the focus on trying to issue reports on a specific timeline. And I think one of the areas that, you know, I've seen work really successful is thinking about what is holding us back in getting these reports out the door. And where are those bottlenecks or those constraints? And some teams may find that those constraints are really towards the end of the audit, right? The testing, the planning's done, your testing's done, you have your observations, but you need that final alignment on how to actually, with management, agree with the observations and agree on the next steps in the action plan. So how do we relieve that constraint at the end that's holding us up from issuing that report? And what we found is successful is just getting that aligned with the business at a completely different timeline, right? So when these observations come up, or when they're even a theory of an observation, sharing that information with the business as real time as possible. And this sounds very obvious to do, but, you know, just think about, how was my audit program designed in my planning phase? Am I sharing actual written observations with the business? Or am I kind of batching those and waiting for a certain milestone or moment in the audit to do that? So really just thinking about, we found something, let's bring those, put those into word, and then let's get that to the business to understand. And if we might be misunderstanding as well. So once we have that alignment as early as possible, discovery or planning, you then say, okay, well, then what, right? Let's get those action plans. And so don't also wait for a certain phase of the audit to collect those action plans. If the business says they're agrees with the observation, and you move immediately into the step of, okay, now what do we do and who needs to be involved and when? Because sometimes it's not just you've agreed on the observation, but who fixes it is way over here and we've never talked to them. And so that's why you want to get this out, you know, as quickly as possible in a very sprint or agile method. And I think, you know, what we've been evolving in as an audit practice, you kind of hear in the previous conversations you have with the leaders you bring on, Trent, is this evolution to agile. I think different companies, different audit shops are at a different spectrum of where they're at. Some are full agile, everything's been agile. Some are just learning it. Some are experimenting it. I think in my first month career, I'm kind of in the middle of that, learning what works, what doesn't work. You know, what I've been experimenting with is moving all my audits into a sprint-based type of operation. So all my audits at the go right now, 3-4 audits, are sharing the same sprint windows, right? 2 weeks for each sprint, how we're operating. And we're aligning as a team on that's how we're going to work. We're aligning with our data team. That's how we want to work. And so we're thinking, if in 3 weeks in sprint three and we're in sprint one, we need that data to execute, all right? We need to plan that data in sprint one so that we're ready for sprint three. And that's the advantage that we're finding with the agile process that we're evolving to, is just better timing our work. And when we better time that work, we're able to kind of batch when we're interrupting the business with their daily activities. So we can try to just time our efforts with the business in 2-3 weeks and not have them feel like we're auditing them for several months. And when we interrupt them for those few weeks, we can get that alignment on the observation and the action plan sooner, kind of all tying back to how we can get the audit report out the door a little faster.
Okay. I got a couple of questions that I was thinking about following up on that. The bottlenecks, I would assume that the whatever bottlenecks you identified would be similar to other organizations, other internal audit departments. Also, they would go, yeah, if we thought about it, we would probably have one there too. Or if we look to identify where the bottlenecks are, it's probably similar. Could you speak to that, I guess, a little bit more in terms of what that bottleneck was? And then were there others also that you found so that other teams listening might go, oh yeah, that's a good point. We have that, and this is how maybe we could fix it.
So when I mentioned bottleneck, you know, it may just depend on what's a unique bottleneck for your department or your constraint in order to issue those. If you have a methodology that says we can't issue an audit report until we have alignment by X, Y, and Z at a certain level, you know, that may be a constraint or a bottleneck to be able to issue that report. So that's where we've tried to, you know, not just say we need this to get this report out in 2 weeks, then we need everybody to get aligned. We are recognizing how in our organization or in larger organizations, or every company is different, but that it takes time to get that alignment on the observations, and that time to agree on what to do it, or what the issue is, it is a constraint, is a bottleneck. And so I think most audit departments probably have that. I can't just say this was found. Okay, this team's going to fix it. I think from a SOC control perspective, right, maybe there's more team, like a more focused team on who the control owner is, and they can tighten those controls up and put processes in place to make sure. And you kind of come to those decisions maybe a little bit quicker in some cases. But from an operational perspective, you're saying, oh, we need to look at a certain process and build monitoring. Well, who needs to be involved in that, and the data, and why didn't this work, and how do we prioritize that? And this system is coming from here, and this system is coming from here, and they're led through different teams. But that's really important to make sure that everybody is really aligned in what we're going to do with the observation. And so trying to bring up those conversations as early as possible in the audit allows you to actually have enough time to get that alignment. I think what's most important is we don't issue audit reports without action plans that people really believe. Because when they actually come to the point of doing, and people say, well, what did we really talk about here? How are we doing this? Then you haven't really achieved anything. You've just issued a report, say, here's the risk, but nobody knows actually how to address the risk. So losing up that conversation, so you take the time to really figure out how and who is going to be involved to address the risk.
Okay. For Agile, those teams that haven't even tried it yet, what did you all do? How did you go about trying it? Did you go through training, books, other resources, or just go, hey, let's just Google how to do this and we'll figure it out?
Yeah. all of those, I think, you know, what we did a specific moment of time for our department was we allowed ourselves to experiment. You know, we have a methodology, we have a handbook that we follow. I think most audit departments probably have a certain, yes, you have a standard, but you have your own interpretation of the standard. We allowed ourselves, okay, let's experiment with Agile. Let's break when we would normally do things. Let's do things in the cycle that makes the most sense with trying to do things in the iterative process and see what works and see what doesn't work. And they start with one, and then, okay, we'll do a few more, and we'll train some other folks and let them have the opportunity to experience it. And so it's just kind of the grace, you know, to make sure that you're experimenting to evolve while still meeting the standards that you need, right? So it's not like when we're experimenting with Agile, we're not approving planning, right? We're not aligned on what the report is going to be going out the door. We are. We're just doing this in different steps along the way. The end product's still the same. We still have the same audit report. We still have the same alignment on the action plan. It's just how we got there. We kind of re-staggered it.
And just real quick, how long have you been running Agile?
I would say for the last year, we have really been experimenting this with this concept. And you see things that work and you see things that don't work. And not every audit, in my view, right, fits in this, you know, in a one way, right? Some audits have to follow a certain path. We have to do these in chunks, or you have to do the whole thing together, right? Are you getting, you know, 100% of a thing done at a time, or you need to move everything 10%, and that's just how it has to come together. So it's thinking, what methodology should we use that would allow us to efficiently complete this audit?
Okay. What would be an example of, we'll just say, a waterfall audit versus an agile audit? I'm thinking about, again, people listening, and if someone does try it, and let's say it's maybe not one that makes the most sense, and they go, well, we tried it and it didn't work, so we're never going to do this again.
Yeah, I think if you have an audit that has multiple scopes, and those scopes can kind of stand alone, you know, let's say you're looking at bill for one, and then let's say you're looking at fulfillment with supply chain for another one. And those processes and teams are completely separate, and any result from those would be addressed by a different team, but it's kind of the umbrella of the goal or the objective of the audit. That's where I think you could say, okay, we're going to work with these specific teams for this period of time, and you align with the business that this is a good time, right? And when you get that alignment, you can have better updates and kind of conversation with them, know we're trying to be efficient, and then you can finish that work and go into turning the next one. I think there's other ones where, let's say you're launching a new product and everything's involved in that, right? There's the marketing, there's the billing, there's the supply chain, there's the customer experience, there's the training of the rep, there's commission. Like, you could think of all of those things. You do need to take one sample and walk it through, or that the experience, and walk it through the whole thing, right? So it's kind of just understanding the objective of the audit and the lens you're looking for and what the end result is. Sometimes I think when I'm planning audit, especially when I'm working on what we do, like a risk register, right? Here's the risk, here's the controls, here's the procedures. When you get to write that risk statement, I think, okay, what would be the worst case here, right? And then what is that going to be? Well, the worst case is this risk and this risk and this risk combined together, then maybe I want to do that testing and look at that holistically. But if I'm looking at this risk, it's really just for here, right? This one specific section, then I can probably break that work out and do those in more of a sprint-based approach.
Yeah. Okay. You've mentioned aligning with the business a couple different times. What does that actually mean? I mean, what's the practical how to do that?
Well, when I say aligning by the business, is we have, as auditors, you know, our result, right? And that's based on our understanding of what our expectation is. So we could go in to do a test and find certain results based on our understanding. But not until you share those results with the business and they fully agree with the kind of objective results that you're trying to prepare, are you really aligned? Right? You could be looking at, actually, well, no, you didn't understand this system was sending something over here and you're missing, you know, the whole piece. So maybe that's something you've missed along the way in a walkthrough, or maybe your expectations were just misunderstood. So it's making sure that you really, your results agree with your expectations and the business agrees with the results. That's kind of the main alignment. Then I think the action plan is just that partnership of, hey, business, how is what you plan to do, or what should you plan to do to address the risk that we just aligned on?
One of the biggest questions that we get a lot of times is about, as a data analyst, is about access to data and not getting it timely. And I'm glad you hit on that a little bit earlier when you're talking Agile, because especially, hey, usually our audits take 2 months and we still can't get the data. You're doing these, you know, 2-3 week sprints. How are you getting it timely? So I appreciate that. But what I know, there's another initiative for you all to really, I'll say, upskill the operational auditors to be more data literate and to be able to not only ask better questions of the data, but then to go actually pull the data and do something with it so that it lightens the load for the, I'll just call whatever you guys call them, the data analytics center of excellence for internal audit. And so that's an initiative a lot of folks have, like, let's upskill all the auditors. How's that been going with you all so far? What kind of actionable insights, if you could share those, have you seen? What kind of ROI have you seen from that already?
Definitely, yeah. So our objective is to kind of shift it, right? We have a base around 10 to 15% of our headcount. We're the data experts. They're the gurus at pulling data and analyzing it and have a career in that. But we're trying to get the rest of the base to have a fairly high level of understanding. And that is the expectation. And there's going to be people on different spectrums of that. So what we've been doing is spending significant time upskilling. You're right. Like, we have day-long training where the whole department is focused on, you know, do we know how to use SQL and connect to our tables to get the information we need? And here's some real examples using real tables that we can do to solve our current problems. And we're tailoring that training specific to the business unit, right? So the tables are going to be different by the business unit. So we're learning the skills, but we're also learning about the data that we need to access in our day-to-day. And it's a journey. You're going to have people who embrace it and have already embraced it. They were already on that journey and pulling it because these tools have been accessible. But we always had that kind of fallback of we could ask these experts, right, to pull this information for us. So we're bringing that back into the team. So everybody has a standard that they have to hit in terms of how literate they are and actually using these tools. And it's not just getting the data, it's using visualization tools or analytic tools to help us use that data once we received it. But you're going to have people who are, you know, we recognize there's people who are going to embrace it and be the experts, and there's going to be people who are, you know, able to do certain basic things, and everybody's going to be on a different level of journey, but everybody has to raise to a certain bar. What we're finding is we're slowly getting to the point of everybody's having that aha moment where they realize they have this question. They've been trained and they know how to get the table and get the access to this information. They write their query and they get the answer, right? And they do this in an hour, in the afternoon, whatever. And instead of going from the process of, I had this question, I have to then submit it to my data expert, they have to kind of prioritize it with all the other competing tasks and then get it back. And then I have to think through it to, you can answer this question yourself, right? And that's where it's just really been eye-opening thing for a lot of folks. I think most people have had that aha moment where when they have it and it's satisfying. On my one-on-ones, I ask, you don't even have to explain what an aha moment is. People just naturally know, like, yeah, let me tell you about this thing I did, and they're proud, right? So it's just getting people to be proud of this new skill they're learning. Where it's actually saved us in audits, right? It's back to the sprint, right? If we're trying to achieve a certain result in a sprint, we can now have a data expert, right, who can help us if there's the more complicated ones. Maybe we need to put those in future sprints so there's enough time to kind of prepare. But every data request we have, we're thinking, should we do it? Or should our data experts need to do it? And more shifting to the, we can do this. And so then we can actually control better what we want to get done in the 2-week period, and you find a way, right? You find a way because you now have a team that can get this data versus, you know, the limited resources that that departments have to support it. And that helped us in planning, and that's helped us in field work. And at first, when we were on this journey, I thought, you know, is this a use it or lose it type of skill? Like, oh, I learned this. I didn't do an audit with data for a few quarters, just the way you work. But I quickly learned, that's not the case at all. Like, I can't imagine an audit that I'm not using my SQL skills to analyze something, right? Just the general planning, right? You can learn things and you're immediately right away getting results. So it's helping us plan and become much more strategic. An example, you could think, oh, we're going to look at all these different SKUs, right? We're going to look at this product, all these different SKUs. But then you analyze it yourself and planning. Oh, you know what? 90% of it's these two SKUs. Do we care about these other SKUs? No. Okay, so we don't need to do walkthroughs and all these other things if we think the risk is here, right? And so you can save your time if you really know, you know how to access this data faster.
That's a good example. And the aha moment, I know in talking to other analysts, I've asked them a similar question, and they can all point to that one test or like that first time where they went, yep, this is it. So for me, it was just a VLOOKUP and doing terminated users. And I went, we could do this everywhere. Like, why do we not do this more often? And I distinctly remember the room that I was in. Like, I remember when I had that aha moment. Something, though, that I'm curious about is how everyone is holding themselves accountable through this upskilling. I think it's pretty easy for people to go, yeah, here we go again. I'm not going to do this. Is that through, you mentioned the one-on-ones that you all have. Is it through one-on-ones and you holding your team accountable? Is there some kind of way it's being measured across the board? Like, how do you make sure that everyone is holding themselves accountable to upskill?
A couple of different ways. I think the most impactful way is the culture and the tone at the top and the expectations. Like, our senior directors are sitting in these trainings, learning these skills themselves, right? So if these very experienced auditors can learn this, so can somebody who's learning this themselves, right? So I think it's the whole culture of the department is this is an evolution we're on, and the training is coming from internal, personalized to your specific groups. So that's, I think, the biggest thing. It is required, right? That's another piece. But we're also using this kind of internal badging method, right? So it, for lack of a better word, like, we're competing with ourselves, right? So somebody's a bronze badge or a silver badge or a gold badge, right? So we have expectations to try to arrive to it. As my team, I have a goal to beat our KPIs of how many people are at a certain badge, right? So I'm competing with my peers to say, hey, I can get my team to this level, but there's an application that you have to have to submit to get to these certain levels. So we're having everybody has the base knowledge, and then we have these applications to get up to these other levels, and we have a department-wide KPI to say we want to get this many people at this level and this many people at this level this year. We aspire to have that many people next year and as a North Star, right? So it's a certification process that's not overly cumbersome, but it's just thoughtful of like, okay, what do you need to be able to prove that you've done? As an actual example for folks thinking about something like this is, okay, well, if your risk writer said the team did the data instead of using their data analyst, well, you just demonstrate that work paper and those scripts to the data expert, and they validate, yeah, you know what, you did this independently. Right. And that's how they kind of have leveled it up. And as a people manager, you're kind of thinking, everybody getting those opportunities to be strategic on how they're going to demonstrate their skills. But we also have enough checks and balances to say, you know, people are really, really learning this. We have also asked the data experts still have the responsibility to review our queries. Right. If it's a basic thing, it's not necessary. But when there's multiple joins, we're doing more halvings and case statements, and it's more complicated for a non-traditional data expert, we send it over there to make sure, hey, can you guys just review this to make sure that this makes sense, we're not duping something or making errors and causing different problems.
All right. I know that you're not the data person. That's not your full-time job, and we spend a decent amount of time on it, but I think it's important for other folks to know how this could be done. And it seems like pretty much any initiative that you all set out to do, you crush it anyway. And so I think people definitely needed to hear that. But with that said, whether it's data or Agile or any other topic, is there anything else that you want to leave the audience with?
I think the kind of my closing thoughts are just, you know, keeping the momentum going through audit. Yeah, I live in the audit report every day. And I do, as soon as we roll into a new audit, we create that audit report and we're thinking through anything we find and framing it up. Yes, those sentences will change, but you really start to think, okay, what's the risk of this observation I found? And you put that sentence down. If you can't really answer that question, then are you testing it the right way? Or if your results spit out a certain way, if I want to say X number of this were wrong, well, leadership probably cares, but what's that mean in aggregate, right? So do I have a test design to think about the aggregate to really get to what their next question is? The thing living in the audit report every day really helps you stay focused on your plan and the momentum of completing your audits in time. And in addition to the momentum, just see something, say something. I think sometimes teams expect to, you know, complete this perfect test and work paper and pass it over to review. Not necessary in some cases. If you're doing sampling or analytics, share that with the business who who may have a completely different expectation, as we talked about earlier, and see, hey, are we validating this? Does this make sense? Are we looking at this the right way? Because you may look at two and you plan to look at 50, and those two prove you don't need to look at 50 anymore because you've already learned what's going on. So think about saving yourself time and the business time by just sharing information as transparent as possible along the way.
Hey, everyone. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Audit Podcast. Whatever platform you're listening on right now, I'm sure there's a subscribe button somewhere, so please hit the subscribe button there. If you're listening through iTunes or Spotify, feel free to go give us that 5-star rating. It only took me about 16 seconds to give myself a 5-star review, and it really helps to get future guests to come on the show, so we'd really appreciate that. Lastly, be sure to check out the show notes and follow us on all our social media channels on Instagram, on LinkedIn, and on TikTok. Also, if interested, please sign up for our weekly newsletter from The Audit Podcast. Thank you all. Have a great one.